With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Championship Roundtable podcast. I'm your host, James Vickers. You can find me on Twitter @_JamesVickers, where I write for a Preston North End fan blog, which is @DeepdaleDigest.
Hello, my name is Louis Shackshaft. I represent Sheffield Wednesday on the podcast. I'm a freelance writer. I do a lot of writing basically on Sheffield Wednesday, and I'm big on statistics also. And you can check me out on Twitter, which is my Twitter handle is just my name, Louis Shackshaft.
Hi, yes, I'm Kevin. I'm the editor of League United Mad. I've got a League United Twitter handle, League_Mad. And I talk and speak and write everything about League United.
Yeah, cheers for joining today, guys. It's been another busy week this week, same as last week. Both all of our teams actually have had midweek games and then also games this weekend as well. We'll start with you first, Louis. Games against Birmingham and Leeds United. After what was a tricky sort of week last weekend, losing the Sheffield derby, sort of tell us how your week's gone and sort of what are your thoughts on it.
It's been difficult, actually, this week as a Wednesday fan because, you know, everyone were wondering if there was going to be any light at the end of the tunnel, basically. Obviously, like you've just said, we lost the Sheffield derby, which was, you know, devastating, if you like. And it wasn't just a loss, it was the manner of the performance. And going into Birmingham, when we played them midweek, again, we lost against a team who were really struggling to score goals and pick up points. So that was very, very disappointing, losing away. I mean, you know, there was just lack of fire and energy again from Sheffield Wednesday, and it was the same in the Sheffield derby, and that's what's been most disappointing. And to be honest, a lot of fans has been a 50-50 split of seeing like Carlos Carvajal in the firing, and the game today against Leeds was, you know, a must-win game for him, and you know we'll come on to that. But against Birmingham, you know, it's not an excuse, but Hooper had a goal disallowed, which was given offside, which I don't think was offside. It should have stood, which at the time was 0-0, and we could have gone 1-0 ahead. But yeah, after the game, we lost against, like I say, a bit lackluster, and we slumped to 16th in the table. And like I say, it was, you know, as a Wednesday fan this week, it's been one of the worst weeks in a long time, to be honest, suffering back-to-back defeats. So, like I say, moving into the Leeds game, it was a must-win game for Carlos Carvajal and for the fans to see where, you know, if we still got a team who were playing for the fans and for the manager. And to be honest, watching the game today against Leeds, the first 20 minutes, I thought we were going to get beat 3-0, never mind win 3-0. Leeds were very much on top. But to be honest, you know, we scored that goal, that first goal. Gary Hooper's absolutely on fire at the moment. You know, he scored a brace in the game. And I think he scored 8 goals in 8 games now. And, you know, you can't grumble with that at any level with any striker. So he's now joint top league goal scorer. So, yeah, once we went 1-0 up, you know, we didn't look back. Outstanding performance in the end, especially up front and in the attacking third. I must say we still slightly look vulnerable in defence. There were a few moments where, you know, head in hands, if you like, where a couple of mistakes defensively have led to Leeds creating chances and probably could have scored a couple of those. So to bag a clean sheet was great, especially for Joe Wildsmith, who's coming to the team in net for Westwood. But yeah, to run out 3-0 winners, like I say, up front and in the attacking third, that's been our best display this season, beating Leeds 3-0 at home. And unfortunately for Kevin, it came today, because I think if they'd have played us any other week this season, you'd have probably beat us. So yeah, international breaks probably we had to win today, and then the international break will hopefully give us time to recoup and push on from there.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you quickly. I saw a funny clip on Twitter this week of the Carlos Carvajal press conference, which I'm sure sort of the majority of people have seen. Especially the clip where he has the £20 note that he, you know, scrunches up, bangs on the table, and says it still retains its value. I've seen some fans on Twitter, sort of Sheffield Wednesday, one in particular, saying that you should go out and get Carlo Ancelotti in, and you know, sort of other things like that. What's your sort of view on Carlos Carvajal? Do you think he is the man sort of to turn it around almost and sort of get you back up towards those playoff and automatic places?
I really hope so. Like, I've always liked Carvajal, and you know, everyone knows this first few seasons in charge, he's done well. Like, especially the first season when we overachieved and got to the playoff final. The big question mark over Carvajal is, yes, he can get us into the playoffs, and there's no reason why he can't do it again this season, but can he, you know, take us over that final hurdle and get us to the Premier League? And that's the big question. Like I say, I am a fan of Carvajal. He has had his critics, especially this last 2 weeks, and going on to the £20 note incident, I think it was just something that he'd already prepared pre-press conference, if you like. I think he knew tough questions were going to be asked, and it was something, his way around it. And in some ways, I understood what he was saying, and it made sense. You know, that the team's still worth the same, and they're still the same value. And you know, you do suffer defeats, and you have to come back and bounce back. And luckily, we've done that today. Because if we hadn't have won today, I was kind of sure it might have been his last game in charge, to be honest. But like you mentioned, fans talking about Ancelotti coming in, and you know, some fans, you know, it's crazy because some fans are realistic, others they make you laugh, others are they just doing it for attention? But I mean, I'm not being funny, but Ancelotti's probably never even heard of Sheffield Wednesday. And not only that, it's all right saying let's spend £20 million and get a manager in and pay him that amount of money. You've got to consider financial fair play. And if it were that easy, every club in the country with money would be doing the same thing. So, you know, you've got to be realistic. I am a firm believer in momentum and stability, and I'm sticking by Carlos Carvajal. The only thing that I believe that's letting us down recently is sometimes his tactics. He seems to like play. We only sometimes start playing after half time or going 1-0 down. I think actually today against Leeds, obviously we've gone on to win, but it's only the second time this season where we've actually took the lead in a game. I'm sticking by him. Like I say, international break. I've always said, in any season, you need to give a manager until about December the 1st. See where you are in the league table. I believe if we're not in the top six by, like I say, December the 1st, then again, questions will be asked. But I'm happy to wait until that date and see where we are from there.
Yeah, just moving on to you now, Kevin. Obviously, two games again for Leeds this week, and coming out of your result last weekend, which was quite a narrow win against Ipswich, who sort of have surprised many people this season. So that turned out to be a good win for you. This week, you had sort of two tough-looking games on paper against Birmingham and then also Sheffield Wednesday, as Louis touched on. Sort of talk us through the week for Leeds, and how's it been?
Yeah, well, obviously not a very good week overall. It was Cardiff, actually, not Birmingham, that we played midweek. But yeah, against Neil Warnock, we never seem to do that well. I think that's the fourth club he's managed against us, and he's managed to get a win against us. So he absolutely loves playing against Leeds. He always seems to get a good result. I mean, when he came to Elland Road last season, we were flying high in the division, and he came and Cardiff beat us 2-0 with a very similar sort of formation he had on Wednesday night, which we couldn't really contain for the 90 minutes. Even when we went down to 10 men, obviously that was curtains for us really after that, even though we did play quite well in the second half. It wasn't good enough really, and we were hoping for a reaction today against Wednesday. But obviously, first 20 minutes, I thought we were the better team today. Saez seemed to be running the show a little bit in midfield. Seemed a matter of time before we scored a goal. But then Wednesday hit us with a sucker punch, and they were the much better team from then on in, really. Had Lasaga got that early second half goal instead of hitting the woodwork, you never know, we might have pulled it around a little bit, but we never looked like we were going to score too many goals today as well. So it's very disappointing. And I mean, Thomas Christian says, you know, we've been very soft against Millwall, Cardiff, and now today as well against Wednesday. But I thought lessons might have been learned after the Millwall game, because actually they pummeled us for 90 minutes and we didn't really get a kick that day. We haven't really learned how to play, apart from the first three games, actually we won fairly comfortably. We haven't really performed in the last three away games. Our home form sort of turned around as well. We're playing quite well at Elland Road, but away from home now, we seem to have lost that touch, and I think we need to be a bit more steely in the middle of the park, really. We can't really afford to have too many flair players in the team. We need a bit of hardness thrown in there. We need maybe Vieira to come back in to make it a bit more solid with Phillips and O'Kane. We need to be a lot tougher away from home, and we were really sort of taken to bits over the last sort of two games, really, of the course of the 90 minutes on each performance. But having said that, we're in a strong position in the league. We're still in the playoff positions. We've got a couple of weeks now to regroup and get ourselves back together again. Hopefully we can start off where we started the season against Reading on the 14th of October. But I don't think it's one of those leagues, really, where nobody's really going to run away with it this season, I don't think. There's no Newcastle, there's no Brighton there. Everybody seems to be beating each other at the moment. So it's very...
Kev, I was just going to say exactly the same as well. I think it's going to be one of them seasons. And it's crazy how, like, even today's game, I know we've ran out 3-0 winners, but one of my friends messaged me and I said, well, yeah, we've beat you 3-0 today and that's great for us, but you still got four more points than what we have. I'd rather I'm not saying I wanted to lose today, but I'd rather have been sat on 20 points. And I think, like you say, it's one of them seasons where you have a good month and you're gonna fly right up the table.
Well, that's right, yeah, because we're 4 points behind Cardiff now. And obviously Cardiff have been a bit of a surprise package this season. I think we're very sort of similar to Wolves in a way. We've got a new sort of foreign coach. We've got new foreign players in the team trying to get to know each other a little bit. So we're still very much a work in progress. But if you're a work in progress and you're still in the top six, then, you know, you can't be doing things too badly. It's just that the last two games have really highlighted how soft we are in certain games. And we need to toughen up a little bit away from home now before other teams start sussing us out a little bit more. And hopefully if we can get to January in or around the top six, we'll get a good chance of, getting some fresh blood in on January. But we are very stable at the moment. It's probably the most stable we've been in a number of years now. The ownership, you know, Radzidane is doing a great job behind the scenes. Christensen's obviously is learning the championship as week by week at the moment. And there's going to be a downside here and there. Unfortunately, the downsides have come in the last sort of couple of league games, but there were very tough games on paper and they proved to be very tough on the grass as well. So hopefully we can regroup after these two games now and hopefully start afresh after the international break.
Yeah, you touched on it there a little bit. Sort of the question that I was going to ask you, obviously, Christiansen sort of coming for his sort of first real test now in sort of championship football. Does he seem like the kind of manager that will sort of learn from that and adapt and sort of, as you've mentioned, make you a bit sort of harder to beat in the midfield and that kind of thing? Do you expect him sort of to learn from that and use that sort of further down the line in the season?
Yeah. Well, I was hoping he'd learned that after the Millwall game. He seemed to know everything, what was wrong after the 1-0 defeat at the New Den. But he didn't really improve at all at Cardiff, and he certainly didn't improve after the first 20 minutes today at Hillsborough. So it makes you wonder if he has tried to change things, but the players haven't really brought that back, brought it onto the pitch. He is learning sort of on a weekly basis, but one of the reasons he got the job, I believe, is that he did a fantastic presentation to the owner saying where he believed where we went wrong in certain games last season when Gary Monk lost a few certain games. He pinpointed where it went wrong. So he seemed to be good at picking out situations from Gary Monk's defeats last season. But I think he needs to learn quickly now from the three defeats that we've had against Millwall, Cardiff and Wednesday, where it went wrong there. And he seems to be a clever coach, and I think he will get it right. We're still in a very strong position after the 11 games. It's one of our best stats in a very long time. So hopefully he will move forward now with this. And we could have gone second in the league had we won today. That's how close it was, really, points-wise. So there's no reason not to be pessimistic about the future. It's early, early doors into the season, and I think we've got off to a fairly decent start. It's just that the last two games are sort of really fresh in the mind, and they're the only two games you can think about at the moment. But when you look at it over the course of the season so far, including the cup run, you know, we knocked Burnley out of the cup as well the other week, which was a great performance. In context, it's been a fantastic start to the season. We just need to get that bit tougher away from home, and I think Christiansen will learn from this and adapt accordingly in future away games.
Yeah, and just moving on to Preston now, it was, again, same as you two guys, a double game week for us. Two very tricky games on paper, not sort of reflected by where they both are in the league, but sort of the calibre of teams that we were playing. We started on Tuesday night with a game against Hull away, which sort of on paper is one of your most difficult games of the season. It was kind of the sort of typical Preston away performance that I've sort of talked about on the podcast in recent sort of weeks and months, where we soaked up a bit of pressure and hit teams on the counter attack with pace. And that was sort of really evident towards the end of the game, where we scored in the 88th minute. Callum Robinson, who he's been frozen out a little bit this season due to sort of a few off-field things. But, you know, fair play, he comes on, he takes his chance and he gets the goal, which helps us win 2-1. We managed to hold on them for the last couple of minutes, but Hull never really looked like, you know, sort of troubling us apart from their goal. So that took us nicely into Saturday, which was sort of when the fixtures came out. And then obviously with the news that Grayson was leaving, it was one game, because we don't have any derby games this season, that fans were really looking forward to. And that was Grayson. And then sort of, as it turned out, Aidan McGeady coming back to Deepdale, who, you know, say what you want about sort of the circumstances that they left in, they both did a great job, Grayson over the last few seasons and McGeady in particular last season for us. So at the start of the game, that sort of respect, they both got sort of clapped onto the pitch, sort of nothing too over the top for them, because at the end of the day, you're there to do a job and to win a football match. But it was really sort of the manner of the first half performance by us in particular, which was quite disappointing. It was sort of similar to the first half at Birmingham, which, you know, is probably the worst we've played all season, considering we then went on to win 3-1. And it was more of the same. We found ourselves trailing at half-time 1-0, and it seems to be whatever Alex Neil says to them in the dressing room, we come out for the start of the second half in these games where we haven't played well in the first half and look a completely different team. And it was evident again yesterday. We came out, we got two goals back in the space of, I think it was two or three minutes. Two fantastic goals, first by Josh Harrop with a free kick across the box, which he's done already this season. So it seems, while many people thought the first one was a fluke, you know, if he's done that twice in sort of the space of three or four games, it's obviously something that they work on, people running across the ball to obstruct the keeper's view, which found the back of the net. And then Jordan Hugill probably scoring sort of one of the best goals he'll ever score, falling to him on his weaker foot on the edge of the box, and he smashes it into the top left corner. So find ourselves going 2-1 up in the space of a couple of minutes at the start of the second half. And then what was sort of disappointing about the second half is straight away you've got your two goals, you know, sit back, concentrate, don't let them get back into it. And literally a minute later, Aidan McGeady goes down the other end. Classic Aidan McGeady, like he did for us last season, and sticks one in the bottom corner from outside the box. And considering that many fans had been quite respectful to him during the game, he sort of can only be described as an Adebayor, which what he did a few years ago at Man City against Arsenal. He scored in front of the Sunderland fans and then ran the full length of the pitch to go down and celebrate in front of our cop, which, as you can expect, didn't go down too well. And there were sort of a few words said, I think. No idea how he didn't get booked for the celebration, but, you know, there you go. So last weekend, sort of when we were chatting about predictions, I'd said 4 points I'd be sort of delighted with out of this week, which is what we ended up getting. Just a little disappointing considering where Sunderland are in the table at the moment, not to put in a performance that, you know, we have done over the last couple of weeks against people like Cardiff especially, and then in that second half against Birmingham. But it's another game undefeated. It's another point at home. You know, we're still in the top six. And if anyone had sort of offered any Preston fan that at the start of the season, considering sort of the tricky start we have had, I think we've played sort of the so-called what you'd class as big teams on paper, even though sort of some of them aren't reflected by that with their league position at the moment. Sixth, you know, every Preston fan would have been delighted about. And it just goes to show really sort of the job that Alex Neil's done since coming in the summer. We're not sort of the prettiest team to watch at times, but we are effective in what we do with sort of countering at pace. I think the one sort of main miss yesterday was Ben Pearson still out with, I think it's a calf issue. And then John Welsh, who is getting on a bit now, and he's played a few games since coming back from injury. I think he had a niggle yesterday, so missed out. And it's sort of, as Kevin said, with Leeds, we just missed that sort of grit and sort of a bit of bite in the middle of the park, which I think if we'd have had one of those or both of them fit, I think it, you know, would have been a different game. We didn't really boss the midfield, but that'd be sort of the only criticism I had of sort of the team selection yesterday. But Alex Neil's hands were tied sort of in that sense. He did the best with what he had available.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I just wanted to ask you both quickly, obviously you've covered the two games from this week. Just players that sort of impressed you for whatever reason, or if there was a particular player that disappointed, sort of in the sense that, you know, he's set his standards quite high and not lived up to that this week. Start with you first on this, Louis. Is there anyone in particular, sort of good or bad, that stood out for you this week?
Well, going to Birmingham, to be honest, most players were pretty poor, so it's difficult to pick out anyone that was great. The only players really that did okay was probably Fletcher, Hooper. Reach had quite a few shots on goal, obviously didn't score. Hunt did okay, so everyone other than that was pretty poor. So it's going to be easier for me to talk about the Leeds game, because obviously the Leeds game I could pick out four or five players what I thought were fantastic today, and they were all obviously in the attacking third. I thought, like I've mentioned earlier, that's the best display in the attacking third we've had all season. So for me in midfield, Barry Bannon was, you know, he was outstanding today. He hit the post as well, probably should have scored. Kieran Lees did score. And again, you know, box-to-box midfielder, you know, sublime at times. He's quiet in the last few games recently. But yeah, today back to his best. And up front, Hooper and Fletcher, I thought, you know, together they've proving a very good partnership up front. Obviously, they're keeping all the other strikers that we've got at the club, like, you know, Jordan Rhodes and Lucas Shaw, etc. I know Forestier is injured, but he's playing them week in, week out now, and they're really at their best, you know, especially Fletcher with his hold-up play. He won everything today. And Hooper is just simply one of those players that he'll score your goals. He can go missing for 60 minutes, but then bag a brace like he's done today. And you know, his hold-up play is decent, but in terms of goal-scoring ability, he's, like I said, he's joint top scorer this season in the league. So for me, over the period of week, I'm going to have to say Gary Hooper's been, you know, he's at his best at the moment, so I can't look past him. The only disappointing player really that's... He's not had a particularly bad game today, but Van Aken's, like I've previously mentioned, he's just got a few mistakes in him. You can see he's only young. He's got quality in him. You know, he can pass a ball, he can cross a ball, even long balls, etc. You name it, he can do it. But sometimes defensively, a couple of basic mistakes where it's just hoof the ball clear, job done. He's not doing it. And like I say, he was punished last weekend twice or three times even against Sheffield United. He's got away with it today, but that's the only disappointing from today's fixture that I can pick out.
Yeah, and the same question to you, Kevin. Is there anyone who's particularly impressed or disappointed for Leeds over this week?
Well, probably our two worst performances of the season, really. So it's a bit harsh to pick anybody out, really, because overall, I think everybody's done their bit over the course of the 11 games. And that's why we're in such a strong position, because everybody has been doing their bit. Obviously, people are going to point at the keeper today, Biedwald, German keeper that's replaced Rob Green. It's difficult to be really harsh on the guy because he's sort of kept six clean sheets, and I think six of those were in a row as well. But having said that, in those games, he hardly had a save to make. And when he's had to do something or make a save, he's sort of been at fault, really. I mean, you could say that he was a bit slow in coming out for the goal today, and maybe shouldn't have clattered the ball and clattered Hooper with it, really. And you could say, yeah, it was a strong sort of performance if he'd have done that. But it seemed very weak at times today. Yet at the death, he sort of pulled off a blinding save to stop Hooper from getting a hat-trick when he sort of fingertipped it onto the bar. So it's a bit difficult. It's easy to criticise a goalkeeper when things are going wrong. But I think he's got to be looking at now. The keeper really is the guy who gives the whole team confidence if he does something right. And over the last couple of games, I don't think he's been at fault, really. And I think Christensen will be seriously looking at maybe bringing in Andy Lonergan, you know, the number two for the Reading game, because he's only had one game since he came to Leeds, his second stint at the club. And he played really well against Burnley in the Cup, and people were thinking, well, maybe he should stay in the side because he does give the back four a lot of confidence. And that's what you want from your keeper. You want to be looking at him thinking, yeah, he's doing his bit today. But over the last two games, you've got to look at Wiedwald and think he hasn't really been assured in front, behind his back four. So while it's a bit harsh criticising, like I say, overall, all the clean sheets that he's made, I think that's come collectively as a side more than it has with him being a good goalkeeper. Because he hasn't really done that much over those games. So I think Christensen will seriously look at that. Having said that, I thought it was a bit harsh losing Rob Green as well. I mean, he maybe should have tried to keep him at the club because I think he would be edging his way back into that position now. We lost him last during the course of the season. He's obviously number two at Huddersfield now. And we've lost Kyle Bartley. He went back to Swansea. And also, obviously, we lost Chris Wood. They were three pivotal players in our season last season. And initially, we didn't seem to be missing them too much. But when you look at the last two games, you probably saw what they did for the club last season. They were assured. They were real captains of the team, if you like. And we're sort of missing that leadership at the moment within the side. Nobody's really grasping the players and saying, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. It's going back to that soft thing again. Everybody seems to be too nice to each other. You need somebody there who the players are going to be scared of and listen to. And we haven't really got that at the club at the moment. And even though, like I say, it's a bit harsh to be critical of the team in the position they're in at the moment. I think going forward, we've got to be looking at maybe getting a leader in there who'll sort the team out. And I think leadership starts with the goalkeeper. And I think Wiedwald will probably be looking at his position now over the next couple of weeks and be thinking, Lonergan might just get his chance when the season starts again on the 14th.
Yeah, and just quickly sort of moving on to the Preston players, I think in particular I wanted to highlight, especially in the Hull game, and it was down to Alex Neil, really. It was 1-1 going into sort of the final third of the game, and it was a sort of a game where in previous years Simon Grayson would have been sort of content with a draw, away at Hull. Not many would have fancied us. But what Neil's done this season, which has been really impressive, is when we have been drawing games, he's still not been afraid to go for it. It was like when we played Leeds, we were down to 10 men and he brought on an attacker for the last sort of 10, 15 minutes, which not managers had not many managers, you know, have the guts to do. So he brought on Callum Robinson and Daryl Horgan, who were involved in the winner. Horgan, brilliant run down the right-hand side, crossed it into Robinson, who, you know, has had his critics this season and not been in the manager's good books for sort of one reason or another, but he's there to put in the header and sort of get us to 3 points. I think them two in particular, especially for the whole game, they've not been given sort of many chances this season, but if they keep sort of making an impact when they do come on, it won't be too long before we see them sort of pushing to get back into that starting 11. With the Sunderland game, it wasn't sort of the best all-round performance, so it'd be wrong to single someone out negatively, but the one player I did want to point out sort of positively, especially in the Sunderland game, and I've talked about him a few times this season, is Josh Earl, the young left-back. For someone who's not made a professional start before this season and then to come in when Greg Cunningham got injured ahead of what many people would class as our second left back, Kevin O'Connor, you know, he looks like he's been playing sort of for 10, 15 years. He's frighteningly good for his age. He's got great turn of pace for a lad who's, I think, 6'2", 6'3". After the Birmingham game, Harry Redknapp couldn't speak highly enough of him, and I think he's going to have a massive future in the game. And we, you know, we've just got him tied down on a new contract, and I think that's great business by us. And it sort of shows a bit of a statement of intent, really, there, because I'd imagine there'll be quite a lot of clubs sniffing around him come January in the summer if there's not already. He's been absolutely fantastic this season, and when he was thrown in, many people were sort of concerned because we didn't then go out and replace Greg Cunningham, even with just a lone player until he's back after Christmas. But to be fair to the lad, he's come in and probably, along with Darnell Fisher, been, you know, our most consistent defender this season. So if he continues in the form that he's in, it's going to be really sort of difficult for Greg Cunningham to actually get back into the starting 11, which, when he got injured, I didn't think I'd be saying, considering he's sort of been in the mix for player of the season the last couple of seasons, and he's won it 1 year as well. So that tells you sort of everything about how Josh Earl's played so far, and I sort of wanted to single him out for praise in particular. But just sort of moving on to one of the topics that I'll talk to you both about today now, and it'll be good to get your thoughts on this. Last week we touched on why sort of the so-called big teams, so like your Hulls, your Sunderlands, to an extent Villa, but they've started to pick it back up now, haven't been doing so well, sort of, especially this season. You know, you find Sunderland in the bottom three still, Hull are down there, even though they had a great win yesterday against Birmingham. We touched on it last week with them, but I wanted to ask you this week why you think, and we've talked about it a little bit sort of on the start of the show, why the lesser fancied teams, if you could call them that, so like your Ipswiches, your Bristol Cities, Preston to some extent, have started the season so well. And is there anything in particular that they're doing better than, you know, like the so-called bigger teams? Start with you first on this, Kevin. I just wanted to get your thoughts on it, really.
Yeah, I think, well, the so-called bigger teams, like you say, Sunderland, Villa, Hull, they've had a sniff of the Premier League over the last sort of couple of seasons. And I think it's at Middlesbrough as well. I think it's a lot to do with the confidence factor. They haven't done that well in the Premier League, and they're bringing that negativity down to the Championship when they try and start afresh as well. They can't get rid of that. No, Middlesbrough away performances were terrible in the Premier League, and they haven't really started the season that brilliantly this season, even with new management. So I think it's to do with the whole aura of the club, really, that they've had a lot of negative results, like Sunderland as well. They've hardly won away, hardly won at home, actually, in a long time. So they're bringing that down with them, I think, even though they're getting the financial clout from parachute payments and stuff. It doesn't seem to be working for them. I mean, it's taken Villa a couple of seasons now to maybe start getting things right, because like you said before, they are sort of improving the results a little bit, but it has taken them a little while. And I think, also going back to what I said previously, there's no real big team running away with it at the moment. So I think the likes of Bristol City, Preston, even Cardiff, who are surprising a few people at the moment, they're sort of taking advantage of all the negativity going around with the so-called bigger clubs, and they're sort of making hay, getting good results early doors, and they seem to be taking the Championship by the scruff of the neck this season. And it's good to see, you know, new teams doing well, and obviously Birmingham were sort of transformed a bit over the summer as well. I mean, Dave Stocks one of the best keepers in the Championship last season. Why he didn't stay at Brighton, I don't know. But obviously, he got offered good money to go to Birmingham, and things really haven't worked out for him that well there. And yeah, I mean, it's probably the most open Championship league in a very, very long time, because, like I said before, nobody's running away with it at the moment, and there's not many points between Cardiff and, when you go down to, say, Fulham in 10th with 17 points. It's a very open league, and teams like Sunderland, Villa and Norwich, to a lesser degree, they've had a couple of seasons in the Championship now. They're finding it hard to get straight back up to the Premier League, because they don't seem to have that, you know, there's swapping and changing managers all the time, and there's no sort of stability there. And obviously, that's a strong thing to have in this league. If you're stable and you stick with your manager. Norwich were on about making, some people were saying they made a bad mistake getting Farke in early in the season, but he seems to have turned things around there now. And I think it's going to be the most open league in many a long time. And it's going to be intriguing, really, to see, you know, how the top six finishes next season, because there's plenty of clubs that could do it this season.
Yeah, and same to you, Louis, really. I wanted to get your thoughts on it as well, similar to Kevin's.
Yeah, I've got to agree with Kevin. For me, it's all about momentum and confidence plays a huge factor. I think the bigger clubs, or so-called bigger clubs, as we mentioned, that come down from the Premier League, I think it takes time for them to adapt, and it can take up to a full season for that to happen sometimes. Not many teams actually do bounce back. And I think, as we've mentioned, the good starts of the so-called lesser teams in the league, like your Bristol City, Ipswich, Cardiff, Sheffield United, they've all kept their managers. And it's, like I said, it's all about momentum and preparation and the mentality. And teams like Sheffield United, who've, you know, come up from League One, have carried on that with that momentum of winning games, and they've got a togetherness and an attacking energy, basically. And they've also got nothing to lose. Whereas, you know, a lot of big teams in this league, like your Sunderlands and your Villas, and I know they've picked up form, but they're probably under more pressure because they're expected to finish in that top six or even top two, if you like. So the pressure's definitely on. But teams like Bristol City, yeah, they play really great attacking football, and like I say, they may have an element of luck along the way, but it's not always about money as well. Like a lot of teams, you know, they'll go and spend 5, 10, 15 million pounds now in this league, and you know, a lot of teams, especially, well, look at Huddersfield last season. You don't have to go and spend money if you've got the right infrastructure. You've got a togetherness, you've got a good spine in your team, that confidence, you know, you win a few games and, you know, the league's your oyster, if you like. You can go on and achieve many things. So for me, yeah, like Kev says, it's just all about confidence. And in this league, games come thick and fast, and anyone can beat anyone on the day.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, to be honest. I think what has struck me in particular, you mentioned there with Huddersfield last season, similar to how we've done, you know, you bring in these sort of young players, hungry players, for example, with us like Ben Pearson, Josh Harrop, who haven't been given a look in at Premier League teams and they're eager to prove something. You get them in for, you know, sort of little money, and to some extent, they've got more to prove than sort of the established professionals who, you know, have come down with wiki teams like Sunderland and that kind of thing. And I think another reason is you've got teams coming down, and we've seen it sort of to some extent with, for example, Arsenal in the Premier League. You get your Sunderland or your Hulls coming down, and there's sort of a bit of a sort of negativity like looming over the club. You get your teams like your Bristols, who are good sort of attacking teams. And I think in seasons gone past, to use Bristol as an example, they'd go to Hull and think, you know, we'll take a point here as long as we don't get beat. And they kind of sit back. Whereas I think now it's changing in the sense that teams are going to places like Hull, like your Villas, your Sunderlands, and they're not fancied. So they think, you know, what have we got to lose? And they're kind of catching them off guard a little bit. We saw it with Sheffield United at Sunderland, which is a sort of a perfect example, went out, attacked them, get Sunderland on the back foot early, and straight away the fans are sort of on the team's back, similar to how they were in the Premier League when it's not going well week in, week out for you. And, you know, it's easy to sort of take away the crowd factor from these sort of so-called bigger teams. And I think nowadays it's shifting that, you know, there's not the respect in some ways where a big team had come down and you'd go to, you know, like your Sunderlands and think, okay, yeah, they're a big team. We'll hold on for a point and then win sort of the so-called league games. I think, yeah, as I've said, teams are going there with not much fear now. And I think it's making the league more exciting to watch, sort of as we've seen by some of the scorelines and results this season. And it's making it sort of a much more competitive league. And as we've touched on, I don't think there's going to be that one team or two teams sort of like a Newcastle or Brighton did last season who are going to be sort of at the top for the majority of the season. I think, you know, you could pick probably 10, 11 teams at the moment who I think throughout the season it's going to chop and change. Hopefully sort of Preston, you know, our teams are up there. But I think it's going to be fascinating to watch sort of how the season evolves. And I think it will be sort of, you know, potentially a team that hasn't been in the Premier League before or one that hasn't been in the Premier League for a while that does end up going up. And I think that'd be such sort of a positive thing for the first and foremost, the Championship, to show it's not sort of the same teams that are yo-yoing between the division each season, between sort of the top of the Championship and the bottom of the Premier League. And to get these sort of fresh teams coming up, and it keeps it sort of exciting for everyone then. But sort of the second topic I wanted to touch on today, we touched on it last season towards the end of the season with Jake, who was host at the time, and it was the sort of the standard of refereeing in the Championship. Obviously, we've had the closed season now, and we've had things like in Germany, we've had VAR come in, and there's been other examples sort of in the Champions League. They've got, you know, the extra official behind the goal now. I just wanted to get your thoughts on sort of this season so far, how you would sort of assess the standard of refereeing and what could be done to improve it. Start with you first on this one, Louis. Is there any sort of particular instance that you'd like to highlight, or is there anything that you think could sort of aid officials in the Championship?
You know what? I've been thinking about this question and it's difficult to say, because as you know, you go to football week in, week out, and 1 week the referee goes unnoticed because he's probably had a really good game. And it's, you know, I'm not saying every decision, but 95% of decisions, it's quite simple for him to ref the game. And you come away and you don't mention it. And then you turn up to a home game the week later and the decisions that a ref makes is just absolutely atrocious, and it can ruin a game. And, you know, it can work in the favour of one team. And I know they say it swings and roundabouts, and it's always going to be human error. So regarding development and change, the only change that I think they can make where they're going to get every single decision spot on is introducing more technology. But if I'm honest, I don't know what that could be. I mean, if I were to have a conversation with a referee before a game, and or to every referee in the league before a game, sometimes a ref seems to make quite a few rash decisions sometimes, which can affect a game. And it might be worth every referee, before making a decision, even if they think they're 100% right, getting a second and third opinion from their fourth official, or, you know, the linesman, or whatever they need to do, and just maybe take that extra 5-10 seconds to think about what decision they're actually making. And I don't mean just obviously a simple foul, etc. What I'm talking about is game-changing decisions like penalties and red cards. And like I say, sometimes it might just seem a bit rash, and they're the big talking points in a game where we come away and go, well, he sent him off, but it were never a red card. And maybe that's where they need to, you know, take a step back sometimes and just think about it for 10 seconds while they're alone, and, you know, push all, I know all the players crowd around when these decisions are made, but, you know, just take that extra time and work it out from there. And that's the only way I can see referees improving, without the use of more technology. But I'm interested to hear what you guys say on that as well.
Yeah, same to you, Kevin. Sort of what would be your thoughts on it?
I'm surprised, Louis, I mentioned the guys today who officiated the game, because they made a couple of horrendous decisions really today. I don't think it was the referee's fault. The referee's sort of guided by his linesman, really, or assistant referees. He made a bad mistake initially. Roof had a good chance on goal and just missed, and the keeper pulled off a good save, and the linesman put up his flag, but he was never offside. So yeah. In a way, I'm glad he didn't score, because it would have been chalked off. And then Lee scored a perfectly good goal to make it, I think it might have been making it 2-0 at the time. And when he showed the replay, you could see he was well onside. So two glaring mistakes by the linesman today, which were shocking, really, you know, in such a big game like that. I think, you know, people have mentioned it before that it stops the game too much, but I think you should have each club really should have, or each side should have two or three challenges during the course of a game to say, look, I think you got that one wrong. Would you mind just sort of reviewing it? Maybe have two or three reviews during the course of the game. And if they had reviewed that in a couple of those incidents, you know, obviously things would have changed, because they would have reversed their original decision. And I think it should not only go for offside decisions, it should go for, you know, red cards and stuff like that as well. I think it only takes a few seconds to have a quick review on a replay. And I don't think it would have that much effect on the game. I know some sort of fans would say, yeah, it's going to spoil the whole structure of the match. But I think you've got to catch up with technology these days. I mean, the poor linesman or the referee, sometimes they get barracked so much for decisions. They need a bit of help sometimes. And they've done it now with the goal line technology in the Championship. And I think they should sort of progress a little bit more as well. As you know, as for the refereeing standards, I mean, it was poor today. I mean, the linesmen were poor. But a lot of the times, the Championship seems to get punished by, if a Premier League referee makes a mistake, he sort of gets banished for a week or two. Says, "All right, you're not gonna be an official at a Premier League game now until you've sort of learned from that mistake." Take a Championship game. The Championship gets punished by decisions made in the higher league. Sometimes we get a poor referee who's done a bad job, and they're the official of the game in the Championship. So I think it's unfair sometimes that the way the structure is done. But overall, you got to say, during the course of a season, it's an old cliche. Yeah, things may even out. You may get a poor decision one week and a good decision the next. But I think we've got to catch up with the 21st century technology these days and make it a bit easier for them. And I think that would help, really.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you two have mentioned there with the use of, you know, more technology coming in potentially. But then, you know, there's always that argument that it disrupts the game, sort of, especially in Germany, from what I've seen so far. There seems to be, I think, a bit of teething issues with it, which I think, in a way, I'm kind of glad they've chose just one league to use it on to start with. I think at the moment, there's sort of the option there to review it if it's sort of a potentially sort of, in quote, big decision. But we're seeing sort of teams at the moment, you know, just using it for the sake of using it. And then because they've had that challenge, the referee has to go off for sort of 30 seconds, review it. And more often than not, he sticks with his sort of initial decision. So I think, as you mentioned, Kevin, if there was a way to implement, you know, potentially a couple of challenges a game, similar to how they do in cricket, and once they're gone, they're gone. I think that'd, if you were going to go down the VAR route, sort of certainly help that, rather than breaking up the play sort of every other decision. And I think, as sort of as we've touched on as well, you know, potentially more help for sort of linesmen. I think quite a lot of, say, quote, refereeing decisions that people get on their backs about, the majority are sort of offside calls, which I think is really hard for the referee and quite unfair to point the blame on him at times, as he's, you know, not in the best view to see something that is happening right in front of him. He can't sort of be over the top looking along the line. So I think if there was a way to sort of help lines, I'm not sure how you'd do that. Potentially, maybe, sort of, I've heard some people talk about replacing linesmen with sort of like a Hawkeye system. But again, I'm not sure how you'd work that and sort of implement it. But it's sort of, there's no sort of right or wrong answer. And it's sort of good to have a debate about it, sort of get different people's opinions. And I think going down that route, especially by having lots of opinions on it, eventually we will see more technology or sort of more aids to the officials. And it's only by having these conversations that you can really sort of get different perspectives and different ideas on it. And I think, you know, we'll look back probably in, say, 5-10 years time and think, you know, why didn't we have these kind of things sooner? Same with how we do now with goal line technology. You know, it's black or white now, and it's not one of those decisions where, you know, you can contest sort of a yellow or a red card as down to sort of interpretation. You know, a goal is a goal, or the ball in play, it's either it is or it isn't. It's not sort of a, you know, a dusty area that you can sort of argue about. So I think definitely in that regard it's helped. But it will be interesting over the next couple of years to see how it evolves and sort of what is brought in. Just wanted to finish on, obviously there's no games next week, but I just wanted it to you just to give me just a quick sort of little preview almost of our games coming back after the international break. So just a little prediction there, sort of score-wise, and how you think your team's all doing it. Start with you first on this, Louis. You're away at Bolton, who struggled. How do you see the game going?
Yeah, we are. Bolton away. I mean, on paper, you'd think it's nothing but 3 points. Bolton haven't won in the league this season. They've only scored 4 goals, I believe, as well, in the league this season. But yet, they beat us 3-2 in the cup and knocked us out of that. So, you know, it's one of them games where it's probably iffy for us, but on paper we should be running out, you know, 2-3-0 winners. So really it's a must-win game. You know, we've got to carry on that momentum. Teams like Bolton, who are sat, you know, firmly at the bottom of the league, we've just got to win. Simple as that. It's looking up because in terms of injuries, the international break may have come at the right time. I'm hoping that Glenn Leuvens and Sam Hutchinson return after the international break. They'll definitely add some more strength to our spine, especially defensively, which I've talked about the frailties earlier on. But if I was going to predict, which I hate, I'm not, which I don't like doing for this game, because it could, you know, it could be a bit sticky for us, but I'm going to say that we're going to win 2-0 just simply because we've got to beat Bolton. So yeah, I'll stick with that 2-0 victory.
And the same to you, Kevin. You've got sort of a difficult looking home game on paper after a couple of sort of disappointing results for yourself. Home to Reading, how do you see the game going?
Yeah, I think it's a good game to get, actually, because Elland Road will be rocking again with over 30,000 fans, I'm sure. Reading have surprised me a little bit this season because been a bit lacklustre the start to their season. They're only on 9 points and in 20th position. And our old friend Jap Stam will be coming back to Elland Road, so he'll probably get a good reception from the Leeds crowd. He was known as Mr. Possession last season because they had so much possession in the games without actually doing anything most of the time. They used to pass it around the back four a lot, but it doesn't seem to be working for them this season because, like I say, they've only had 2 wins in 10 games. And it's been a bit lacklustre, which is surprising because obviously they reached the playoff final last season, only lost on penalties to Huddersfield. So you wouldn't expect them to come out running really this season, but things haven't really worked out. But I'm predicting Leeds will get back to winning ways, hopefully, because our home form is good this season. And I expect us to get our 4th home victory of the season. Won't be an easy game by any means. I'll set, you know, 1-0, maybe 2-0. It's going to be a low-scoring game, but I reckon we'll have plenty of time to get back on track again. Christiansen will get them sorted out again, and hopefully we'll get back to winning ways.
Yeah, and just quickly to touch on Preston, we've got, you know, a difficult game on paper. It's kind of been sort of a bogey ground for us in the 2 years we've been back. It's away at Fulham, who, you know, are always good at Craven Cottage, and no doubt I'll be talking to Russ, who also features on this podcast, about it. If you were to ask me now, I'd take a draw happily. You know, it's a difficult place to go. We'll take a lot of fans down there, as we always do, to the London games. So hopefully we can sort of, the team can give something to shout and you know, smile about. Really tough game, but hopefully we should have Ben Pearson back. I think Alex Neil's, you know, said he's going to be back fit from this calf injury, or sort of back in the squad at least after the international break, and most likely John Welsh as well. So there'll be them two there that we missed against Sunderland. Apart from that, no sort of other injuries really looking like they'd be coming back. The only other ones that are out at the moment are Tom Clark, Greg Cunningham and Declan Rudd, the keeper, who are out with sort of longish term injuries. So I think it'll be sort of end of October, November before we sort of see Declan Rudd in particular, and then after Christmas for the other two. But yeah, I'd take a draw. Potentially, I think that's how the game will go. You know, Fulham have struggled a little bit this season, even though they got that good win against QPR on Friday night. So yeah, draw I'd be absolutely delighted with, but as long as we can get a result and keep up with the sort of the top of the pack, there'll be no complaints from me. But with that, we're out of time. Thank you for joining me today, guys. If you both wanted to tell everyone where they can find you and what projects you're involved in, now would be a good time.
So my name's Louis Shackshaft. I represent Sheffield Wednesday on the podcast. I do a lot of freelance writing, and it's obviously talking and writing about Sheffield Wednesday for different publications. And you can check my Twitter handle is just my name, at Louis Shackshaft.
Yeah, I'm Kevin Markey, Leeds United Mad. Catch me on Leeds_Mad on Twitter or my Leeds United Mad website. And join me on the Yorkshire Football Show on Radio Yorkshire, where you can do a lot of contributions if you're involved with Yorkshire Club. So hope to hear from you, Louis, on Wednesday. If you want to join us in on that, it'd be great to get your contribution on Wednesday.
Cool. Send me a message, Kev. I'm in.
I will do, bud.
And yeah, you can also follow me on Twitter @_JamesVickers, where I tweet mainly about Preston and a bit of Bundesliga as well, if you're into that. I write for a Preston North End fan blog, which is @DeepdaleDigest, where we have weekly pieces come out, player match reviews, and also previews to the coming games. So yeah, definitely check that out. Cheers for joining me today, guys, and we'll see you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.